Leisha worked deep into the night in the surgery of a former Razonian hospit, cutting and stitching the injured Dalsharim back together again. Her arms were covered in blood and her back ached from bending over the table, but Rustavi would live, and likely recover fully. The Damating, who had taken over the building, whispered among themselves as she worked, watching Leisha in something part wonder and part horror. She could sense their anger at her intrusion, especially at night, and their resentment of her barked orders, but her translator was Jardir himself. Wanda and Garrod had been forced to remain outside, as had Roger and Jardir's bodyguards. The Damating, acting like captives in their own home, breathed an almost palpable sigh of relief when Enevera stormed into the surgery. Her face was livid with rage as she strode right up to Leisha, standing nose to nose.
How dare you?
How dare I what? Save the life of a man you would have let bleed until dawn?
Enevera's only response was to slap Leisha in the face, her sharp nails drawing blood. Leisha was knocked aside, and before she could recover, the woman drew a curved knife and came at her again.
You are not fit to stand in my husband's presence, much less lie in his bed.
Leisha's hand darted into one of the many pockets of her apron, and as Enevera drew close, she snapped her fingers in the Damaja's face, scattering blinding powder in a tiny cloud. Enevera fell away, clutching her face as Leisha righted herself. Enevera splashed a pitcher of water in her face, and when she looked back at Leisha, her face powders were running in horrid streaks. Her reddened, hate-filled eyes promised death.
Enough! I forbid you to fight!
You forbid me?
Leisha felt much the same. Jardir could no more forbid her anything than Arlen, but Jardir was only focused on Enevera. He raised the spear of Khaji for all to see.
I do! Do you intend to disobey?
Silence fell over the room, and the other Damating looked at one another in confusion. Enevera might be their leader, but Jardir was the voice of their god. Leisha could well imagine what might happen if Enevera resisted further. Indeed, the woman seemed to realize it as well, and deflated. She turned on her heel and stormed from the hospit, snapping her fingers to the other Damating, who all followed after her.
I will pay for that.
Jardir spoke in Krasian, but Leisha understood. For a moment, his shoulders slumped, and he looked not like the invincible and infallible leader of Krasia, but like her own father after a fight with Alona. She could almost see Jardir imagining all the myriad ways Enevera could make his life miserable, and her heart went out to him. The tired man vanished in an instant, replaced again by the most powerful man in the world. Jardir burst from the Damating sanctuary, Leisha following close behind. Amkaji and Koliv had put lines on Garrod's wrists, and three Dalsharim pulled on the rope to either arm, hauling at him like a raging stallion. One warrior clung tenaciously to his great back, his arms crossed in front of the giant's throat in an attempt to choke him down, but if Garrod even noticed, he gave no sign. The warrior's feet swung far from the ground, and even those pulling on the line stumbled to keep him contained. Roger was pinned helplessly, almost casually, against a wall by another Dalsharim, who held him in place with one hand as he watched what was transpiring, an amused grin on his face.
What is going on here? Where is the woman?
The cry came from an alley between the buildings.
Any warrior touching one of the Greenlanders when I return will lose the offending hands.
Jardir charged to the alley, flying past the others at blinding speed. Wanda was in the alleyway, held from behind by a warrior. She bit into his arm. Another warrior lay on the ground, clutching between his legs, and a third, Jerem, leaned against the wall, staring in horror at an arm twisted in an impossible direction.
Release her!
Everyone looked up at Jardir. Wanda was released instantly, and she drove an elbow into the stomach of the warrior behind her, doubling him over as she reached for the knife at her belt. Jardir pointed his spear at her.
Do not!
Just then, Leisha made it to the alley. She ran to Wanda immediately.
What happened?
Those sons of the court tried to rape me!
The Northern whore lies, Deliverer. She attacked us and broke my arm. I demand her life!
You expect us to believe that Wanda lured the three of you here and attacked you?
Jardir ignored them both. It was obvious what had happened. He had hoped Wanda's prowess on the battlefield would impress the warriors enough to dissuade this sort of behavior, but Jerem and the others had apparently felt the need to remind her that off the battlefield, she was still a woman and an unmarried one at that. By Evesian law, she had no right to refuse a Sharem or attack a man for any reason. Jerem and the others had committed no crime. They were within their rights to demand the girl's life. But the Greenlanders did not see it that way. Jardir knew, and he needed their warriors, man and women alike, for Sharaka. He glanced at Leisha and knew, too, that not all his reasons were selfless. The Sharam would have to be taught to control themselves, an abject lesson like the one he had given Hasik so many years before. Shardir swept his arm at Jerem and the others, then pointed at the wall. They obediently lined up, back straight, all of them ignoring wounds the girl had inflicted. She was a born warrior, whatever her gender.
I am intended toward Mistress Leisha. An insult to one of the mistress's servants is an insult to her. An insult to her is an insult to me.
Shardir looked Jerem in the eyes, lightly touching his chest with the point of the spear of Kaji.
Have you insulted me, Jerem?
Jerem's eyes widened. He looked frantically at Wanda, and then back at Jardir. He squirmed under the spear tip, though its touch was feather-light, and began to shake.
Forgive me, Shadamaka!
Jerem collapsed, falling to his knees. Jardir kicked him, taking a step backward and broadening his gaze to take in the warriors on either side of Jerem. Immediately, they too fell to their knees.
Forgive me, Shadamaka! Forgive
Silence!
He pointed to Wanda.
That woman killed more Alagide this night than the three of you combined, and so her honor is worth the three of your lives.
The men cowered, but they did not dare to speak in their defense.
Go to the temple and pray through the night and the coming day. You will take your spears and go into the night tomorrow, shieldless and clad only in black bidos. When you are pulled down, your bones will go to Sharikora.
The men shuddered with relief and kissed Jardir's feet, for in those words he had promised them the only thing Asharam truly feared to lose, a warrior's death and entry into heaven's paradise. Jardir looked back at Leisha, whose face was a sandstorm.
You just let them go?
Jardir realized that their exchange had been in Krasian, and she had likely understood only a fraction of what was said.
Of course not. They will be put to death.
But they thanked you.
For not castrating them and stripping them of the black.
Would have served the Khor sons right.
No, it would not.
What else do you require? They did not succeed in violating or even harming the girl, so it is not expected that they should compensate her for her virginity.
I ain't a virgin anyway.
Leisha looked at her sharply, but the girl only shrugged.
But it's required they pay with their lives?
They will die with honor. They will go naked into the night tomorrow with only their spears to protect them.
That's barbaric!
It was then Jardir understood. The Greenland taboo was death.
I had thought the punishment would please you, mistress. I can have them whipped, if you prefer.
Leisha looked to Wanda, who shrugged. She turned back to Jardir.
Very well. But we require to bear witness, and I to treat the men's wounds when the punishment is complete.
Of course, mistress. It will be done at sunset tomorrow for all the Sharam to see and remember. I will administer the lashes myself.
Thank you. That will suffice.
This time.
Jardir smiled to see the fierceness in her eyes. Three spears of the Deliverer it took just to hold her, and none of them able to do the deed. With further training, even Kai Sharam would fall before her. Looking at her, he came to a decision, one that he knew might well tear his army asunder. But Averam had chosen him to lead Sharaka, and he would lead as he saw fit.
There will not be another Wanda Var Flynn, Cutter Hollow. On this, you have my word.
Thank you.
Who's that?
Roger started awake and looked about him. His room was dark, though he could see cracks of light at the edges of the velvet curtains. Roger cracked an eye as one of Aben's wives, or perhaps one of his daughters, Roger could never tell the difference, entered. She was clad as they all were, in loose black robes that hid everything save their eyes, which were cast down in his presence.
You have a visitor, son of Jessam.
She moved to throw back the heavy velvet curtains, and Roger threw a hand over his eyes as light streamed in through the windows of his richly appointed bedroom. Leisha might have a whole floor of the giant manse, but Roger still had been given a full wing of the second floor, more rooms than the entire inn his parents had run in Riverbridge. Elona had been furious to learn of the largesse the Krasians had heaped upon him, having only gotten a bedroom and sitting room herself, luxurious though they were.
What hour is it?
Just after sunrise.
Tell whoever it is to come back later.
Oh, I cannot, master. Your visitor is the Damaja. You must see her at once.
Roger sat bolt upright, all thoughts of sleep forgotten. The whole palace was astir by the time Roger felt presentable enough to leave his chambers. His jongleur's paint box had taken the circles from beneath his eyes, and his bright red hair was brushed and tied back. He wore his best motley.
The Damaja? What in the court does she want with me?
Garrod was waiting for him in the hall and fell in behind him. Roger could not deny that he felt safer with a big cutter, and by the time he made it to the stairs, Leisha and Wanda were descending from above with Ernie and Alona in tow.
What does she want?
Search my pockets, you'll find no answers.
They all followed Roger down the stairs, making him feel as if he were leading them to a cliff. Roger was a performer, used to being the center of attention, but this was different. He put his hand to his chest, clutching his medallion through his shirt. The hard shape gave him comfort as he followed the gestures of Aubyn's women into the main receiving hall. As before, Roger felt his face heat at the sight of the Damaja. He had bedded dozens of village girls and more than one cultured Angerian royal, all of them fetching or pretty or even beautiful. While Leisha surpassed them all in beauty, she seemed almost unaware of that fact, making no effort to take advantage of her power. But the Damaja knew. The perfect curve of her chin and gentle shape of her nose behind her transparent veil, the wide exotic eyes with long sweeping lashes and the oiled black curls that spilled in rivulets down her shoulders. Her diaphanous robe covered everything and nothing, showcasing the smoothness of her arms and curving thighs, the round fullness of her breasts and the darkness of her areole, her hairless sex. The air about her was sweet with perfume. But more, every gesture, every stance, every expression brought all these things into a harmony that sang to every man in her presence. What Roger did to demons with his fiddle, the Damaja did to men with her body. He felt himself stiffen and was thankful for the looseness of his motley pants. She stood in the receiving hall, two girls standing behind her, covered in the Crasian fashion Inevera disdained, though her robes were fine silk. One was clad in the white of a Damating, the other in black. Long black braids fell from the back of their headscarves, bound in gold bands and reaching past their waists. Their eyes danced at him from behind their veils.
Roger Asu Jessam Amin Ambridge, I am honored to meet you.
Oh, Damaja, the honor is mine. That you have come here to meet one as insignificant as I.
Don't lay it too thick, Roger.
My husband bade me come, telling me you accepted his offer to find brides for you, that your magic be passed on to a new generation.
I did?
Of course. My husband offers you his eldest daughter, Amanva, for your Jiwaka.
There must be some...
mistake, he wanted to say, but the word caught in his throat as Inevera beckoned the other girl forward.
This is Amanva's servant, Sigva, daughter of Hanya, sister to the Shar Damaka.
His daughter and his niece?
My husband has made it known that Evaram speaks to you. He would not honor you with less than his own blood. Sigva will make a suitable second wife if you wish. Amandva can then take over seeking future brides in accordance with your own tastes.
Creator, how many wives does one man need?
If he is worthy and they of him, a man should have as many as he can provide for and keep with child. But some are not worthy.
Who is Amanva's mother?
Inevera looked at her and raised a brow. Alona spread her skirts and dipped into a smooth, respectful curtsy that seemed utterly at odds with the woman Roger knew.
Alona Paper of Deliverer's Hollow. Alicia's mother?
Inevera's eyes widened at this news, and she smiled widely and went over to the woman embracing her.
Of course. I am honored to meet you. There are a great many matters for us to discuss, but that is for another time. I understand the son of Jessam's mother is with Evaram. Will you stand for her in these proceedings?
Of course.
Stand for her? How?
To ensure you behave as they lift their veils, and to verify their virginity. I am Amanva's mother. Does that meet with your approval?
Of course.
Inevera nodded and turned to regard the others.
If you will excuse us, please.
You heard her. Shoo! Oh, not you, Roger.
Only Leisha stood behind.
You have no place here, daughter of Ernie. You are not family to the groom or brides.
Oh, but I am, Damaja. If my mother stands for Roger's, then I, as her daughter, may take the place of his sister. The Avija is quite clear on the matter.
I want her to stay.
As you wish.
Lock the doors, Leisha. Can't have Garrod stumbling back in saying he forgot his axe.
The sight of their joint amusement frightened Roger more than anything. Alona seemed to know far more than Roger about what was happening. Leisha seemed equally disturbed, but whether it was from the laughter or the casual way Lona ordered her around, she couldn't be sure. She turned and strode to the huge gilded doors. He felt more like they were locking him in than Garrett and the others out. Anevra snapped her fingers, and the two girls straightened their backs, though they remained on their knees on the floor.
Amanva is Damating, healer, midwife, and chosen of Evaram. She is young, but she has made her dice and passed every test.
Anevra looked at Leisha and smiled.
Perhaps she can treat those cuts on your face.
She indicated the red lines on Leisha's cheek from where Anevra had scratched her.
You seem to be blinking a great deal, Damaja. Do your eyes sting you? I could prepare a rinse if you wish.
I myself have given my husband 8 sons and 3 daughters. The women of my family are similarly fertile, and the bones say Amanva will breed true.
Bones?
That is no concern of yours, Chin. What matters is that Amanva will give you sons, son of Jason. Sikva's mother was similarly fertile. She too will breed well for you.
Yes, but can they sing?
It was the punchline of a favorite bawdy joke of Eric's, a tale of a man who could never be satisfied no matter how many women he bedded.
Of course.
Anevra spoke in her native tongue.
Amanva, sing.
Roger didn't understand the words and had never had a knack for singing himself. But after years of performing with Eric, the greatest singer of his time, he knew well how to listen and judge it. Amanva's voice put Eric's to shame. It lifted him like a great wind, stealing the footing from under him and sweeping him away on its notes. But then a second wind came, wrapping itself around the other as Sikva smoothly joined in. They found harmony instantly, and Roger was stunned. Women or no, if they went to the Jongleurs Guild in Angiers, their careers would be assured. Roger said nothing, standing in silence while the two young women sang. When Anevra finally ended their song with a wave, he felt like a puppet with its strings suddenly cut.
Sikva is also an accomplished cook, and both had been trained in the art of lovemaking, though they are unknown to men.
The, art?
Anevra snapped her fingers. Amanva immediately rose, coming gracefully to her feet as she lifted a hand to unfasten her veil. The thin white silk drifted away like a wisp of smoke, revealing a face stunning in its beauty. Amanva was her mother's daughter. Sikva came up behind her, undoing some hidden fastening at her shoulders, and Amanva's entire robe seemed to simply dissolve, the silk running off her to whisper to the floor. She stood naked before him, and Roger gaped. Anevra circled a finger, and Amanva obediently turned so Roger could inspect her from every angle. Like her mother's, Amanva's body was perfect, and Roger began to fear even his motley pants were not loose enough. He wondered if he would be expected to undress as well and have all the women see his arousal.
Creator, is all this truly necessary? Be quiet. Of course it is.
Amanva turned and unfastened Sikva's own silk robe, and it vanished like a shadow in the sun, becoming an inky pool at her feet. She was not as beautiful as Amanva, perhaps, but apart from the other women in the room with him just then, Roger had never seen her equal.
You may verify their purity now.
That won't be necessary.
Your women. Something must be saved for the wedding night, after all.
Anevra turned to Ilona.
Would you care to do the honors?
My daughter is more qualified.
My mother wouldn't know a hymen if she saw one. She was rid of hers before she had a good look at it.
Ilona caught the words and scowled, but she said nothing, glaring at Leisha.
Oh, all right. Anything to get this business concluded.
Leisha bent to pick up the girls' robes, then took their arms and led them into a small, curtained servant alcove to the side of the hall. Leisha lowered the curtain, blocking them from view, and the girls obediently leaned over a small table, presenting themselves like brood mares. She had examined hundreds of young girls in her years as an herb gatherer, even the Duchess of Angiers herself, but it was always for their health, not some honor ritual. Bruna had little patience for such nonsense, and her apprentice was no different. But Leisha knew, too, how fragile their relationship with the Crasians was. She would win no allies by publicly spitting on their traditions. Amanva's hymen was intact, but when Leisha reached for Sikva, the girl flinched. There was a sheen of sweat on her, and her olive skin seemed paler than before. She clenched tight when Leisha slipped a finger into her, but it was not enough. She wasn't a virgin. Leisha smirked. As barbaric as this ritual was, it had just given them reason to claim offense and refuse the girls before Roger said something foolish. But then the girl looked back at her, and the fear in her eyes was a slap in the face. Amanva caught the look and scowled.
Get dressed.
Leisha tossed them their robes. Sikva quickly dressed and then moved to assist Amanva, who glared at her as she fastened the Damating's silk robe. Leisha's face was serene as she returned with the girls. Roger knew the verdict was irrelevant. He was no more going to marry Jardir's daughter than Leisha was the man himself. But for some reason, his heart was thudding in his chest as if his life depended on the answer.
Both virgins, for what it's worth.
Of course.
But Amanva did not seem to agree. She moved to her mother, whispering in her ear and pointing first at Sikva and then at Leisha. And Nevera's face darkened like the sky before a storm, and she strode over to Sikva, grabbing the girl by her long braid. Roger started for them, but Ilona grabbed his arm so hard it hurt, holding him back with surprising strength.
Don't be stupid, fiddle boy.
Sikva was dragged behind the examination curtain. Amanva followed, pulling it shut behind them.
What in the core just happened?
Sikva's not a virgin.
But you said she was.
I know what can happen to a girl when people start questioning her purity. And I'll be corspawned before I do it to anyone else.
Can't save people from themselves, Leisha. Your little lies probably made it worse for her still. You just told the truth and let me ask for a bag of gold to make up for her lost value. It would have been done with already.
She's a human being, Mother, not a...
Will you both please shut it?
Both women glared at him angrily, but they quieted. There was no sound from the curtain now, and that scared Roger all the more. He was about to rush over when it opened and Inevera strode back to them, Amanva and Sikva in tow. Amanva had her arm around the other girl, comforting her and offering support. Roger's heart went to them, and his hand slipped up to touch his medallion through his shirt. Inevera bowed to Roger.
I apologize for the insult to you, son of Jessam. Your weed picker has lied to you. Sikva is impure and will, of course, be punished severely for her lies. I beg you not to doubt my daughter's honor by her association with this harlot.
There was a pause as everyone waited for his response. Roger's eyes flicked around the room, and it seemed as if every woman was holding her breath. Why? They had given no thought to him at all a moment ago. But then it hit him.
I'm the offended. After hearing them sing, I will not break the set. Sikva's voice is more important to me than her purity.
Ah. That is most forgiving of you, more than this harlot deserves.
I'm not deciding anything yet, but I would prefer she not be subject to undue stress that might affect her voice before I do.
Inevera smiled behind her gossamer veil as if he had passed some kind of test.
Well, this will affect the dower, of course.
Oh, of course. If you will agree to a chaperone, the girls may stay in the son of Jessam's wing, that he might accustom to them and ensure their lack of stress before he makes his decision.
Oh, my mother is an excellent chaperone.
Aman arrived just before sunset to escort them to the whipping. Leisha made a last check of the herbs and implements in her basket, breathing deeply to quell her churning stomach. For what they did to Wanda, the Dalsharim deserved no less, but that did not mean Leisha wanted to watch their backs torn open. After seeing how lax the Krasians were about healing, though, she worried the wounds might infect and kill the men anyway if she did not treat them herself.
I hope you understand the honor my master pays you and the daughter of Flynn by administering the whipping personally, rather than leaving it to some Dama who might be lenient in sympathy to their act.
The Dama have sympathy for rapists?
You must understand, mistress, that our ways are different from yours. The fact that you and your women walk freely with your faces and your charms showing offends a great many men who fear you put illicit ideas into the minds of their own women.
And so they sought to show Wanda her place.
Yes. My master has commanded that the Damaji attend as well, with their Kaisharam. He wishes them to see that they must accept some of your ways.
Amon said it was much the same when he met the Parchin.
My master mentioned the Parchin?
I did, actually. I was surprised that Amon knew him, too.
Oh, yes. My master and the Parchin were great friends. Amon was his Ajinpal.
Ajinpal?
His blood brother, perhaps you would say. Amon showed him the maze. And they bled for each other. Among my people, This is as binding as having the same blood in your veins.
But that doesn't...
We must leave now, if we are to arrive in time, mistress.
Misha nodded, and they gathered the rest of her delegation from the hollow, including Amanva and Sikva, who attended closely to Roger. They were escorted to the town circle of Fort Risen, a huge cobbled ring at the center of the city, eyed with a great well and surrounded by bustling shops. Leisha saw Razonian women shopping as well as Krasians, but though they still wore their northern dresses, the women's faces were wrapped in cloth that draped over their necklines as they went about in public. Many of them stared wide-eyed at Leisha and her mother, walking about uncovered, as if expecting their Dalsharim escorts to turn on them at any moment. Many of the Krasians had already gathered, including the Damaji in their canopied palanquins, and many Sharim and Dama. Three wooden posts had been erected in the circle, but there were no shackles or ropes to be seen. The crowd turned to see Jardir enter the circle, followed by Enevera on her palanquin and his other wives in tow. Leisha counted 14 of them, but had no idea if that was all. They came and stood next to Leisha and the hollowers, close enough for Leisha to smell the Damaja's perfume. Jardir walked to the posts, waving his hand at the spears of the deliverer. The three Dalsharim needed no urging and no escort, walking out into the square and stripping to the waist. They knelt and touched their foreheads to the cobbles before Jardir, then stood and wrapped their arms around the poles with nothing to hold them in place. The one whose arm Wanda had broken had the limb in a white cast. Jardir reached into his robe, pulling free a three-tailed whip of braided leather with sharp pieces of metal woven into the last few inches of each tail.
What is that?
It is called the Alagai tail, a Dama's whip. They say being struck by it is like the lash of a sand demon's tail.
How many strokes will they each get?
As many as they can stand for. Sharum are whipped until they lose their grip on the pole and fall.
But that could kill them.
Sharum are great warriors, but not known for their intelligence or instinct for self-preservation. They think it is a test of manhood to endure as many strokes as possible. Their brethren will be betting to see who endures longest.
I will never understand men.
Nor I.
It was brutal to watch. Each strike of the Alagai tail leaving bright lines of blood on the backs of its victim. Jardir gave each man a stroke before returning to the first, but Leisha didn't know if it was a kindness or an attempt to keep them from growing numb to it. She flinched with every blow, feeling as if it were striking her, too. Tears streaked her face, and she wanted nothing more than to flee the awful scene as the backs of the men became huge open wounds that showed their ribs to the world. None of them even cried out or had the sense to fall. At one point, she looked away and saw Enevera watching the proceeding with utter calm. She saw Leisha looking her way and sneered at the tears on her face. Something broke in Leisha then, a flare of anger acting as a ward against the suffering of the men. She straightened her back, dried her eyes, and watched the rest of the whipping with the same cool detachment the Damaja showed. It seemed to go on forever, but at last one of the warriors fell, and then another. When the last man fell, Jardir nodded to her, and Leisha rushed out to the men, pulling out the thread, salves, and bandages she had prepared.
Spread the word to all who would see paradise at the end of the lonely path. Any woman who takes a demon in Alagai Sharok shall be Sharam Ting, and of all the rites of Sharam accorded her.
Leisha saw horrified faces on Dama and Sharam alike.
If any oppose this decree tonight, let them step forward. I promise a quick death with honor. To any who oppose my word tomorrow, I will not be so lenient.
There were many scowling faces in the crowd, but none foolish enough to step forward. The next day, Aban arrived in the courtyard of the Palace of Mirrors with a Dalsharim at his side. The warrior's red night veil was around his shoulders, and his black beard was shot through with gray. There was nothing else remotely weak about the man, but Leisha was still surprised. Few of the Krasian warriors seemed to live long enough for their beards to be touched with gray at all. He walked proudly, but his hard face was pinched as if he was biting back a scowl.
May I present Gavram Asu Chenin Amkaval Amkaji, drill master of the Kaji Sharaj.
The warrior bowed at the introduction, and Leisha spread her skirts and dipped a curtsy in response. The warrior said something in Krasian too fast for Leisha to follow, but Aban was quick to interpret.
He says, I am here at the Deliverer's command to train your warriors for Alagasharak. Drillmaster Kaval was instructor to the Shardamaka and myself when we were in Sharaj. There is no one better.
Misha's eyes narrowed, and she looked at Aban, searching for the elusive truth in the practiced smoothness of his face. He was crippled in Sharaj, after all. Misha turned to Garrett and Wanda.
Do you wish to train?
Kaval and Aban had a short exchange, again speaking so fast that Misha, despite understanding many of the words, could still not follow. Aban seemed to argue a point, but Kaval balled a fist, and the Kafit bowed in submission.
The drillmaster asks that I tell your warriors their wishes are irrelevant. The Shardamaka has given a command, and it will be followed.
So right, Leash. I want to learn.
Me too.
Misha nodded and stepped aside as Kaval beckoned the two forward for examination. He obviously approved of the giant Garrett, but seemed less impressed with Wanda, though she was as big and strong as most Dal Sharam. He then came back to Misha. He again spoke in Krasian.
I can make a great warrior of the giant if he is disciplined. The woman we shall see.
The drillmaster stepped back into the courtyard, his movements quick and graceful. He looked at Garrett and thumped his chest.
Seal it!
The drillmaster would like you to attack him.
I didn't need you to translate that.
Garrett stepped forward, towering over the drillmaster, but Kaval seemed unimpressed. Garrett attacked, but his punches, careful though they were, met only air. He lunged to grapple and found himself on his back a moment later. Kaval twisted his arm and then released him.
He will be even harder on you. Steel yourself.
I ain't afraid.
Wanda lasted longer than Garrett, her move smoother and quicker, but the outcome was never in doubt. Wanda's face grew pale and she gritted her teeth, but she refused to cry out.
The drillmaster will break her arm if she does not submit.
Wanda!
Kaval released her.
Belki bin Bersis, or Anlam Verbilium.
Perhaps I can make something of her after all. Please leave us so we may train without distraction.
Misha looked at Garrett and Wanda and nodded.
Why don't you join Roger and I for tea, Aban?
I would be honored.
But first, make it clear to Master Kaval that there will be the core to pay if I come back to find warriors too injured to fight tonight.
Aban's wives tried to serve them, but at Amanva's command, they backed off.
Sekmet vas bizimet.
She clapped her hands and Sikva scurried to prepare the tea. Misha wrinkled her nose. The girl might be Jardir's niece, but even she was little more than a slave.
They've been doing this since yesterday.
Aban nodded to Amanva.
Obizim Roger itia klarma. Hizmet etmek ishin yirimiz.
It is our place to serve Roger's needs. We will suffer it from no other.
I could get used to this.
Just don't get too used to it. It isn't gonna last.
Sikva returned soon after with the tea. She served silently, eyes down, and then retreated to where Amanva stood by the wall. Misha took a sip of her tea, swirled it around her mouth for a moment, and then spit it back into the cup.
You added a pinch of black leaf powder to the mix. Clever. Most people wouldn't have tasted it, and at that dosage, it would take weeks to kill me.
Roger spit his tea all over himself. Misha caught his cup as it fell and ran a finger along the porcelain rim, tasting the residue.
Nothing for you to worry over, Roger. Seems they're not quite so eager to be rid of you.
Aban carefully put his cup back on the table. Amanva looked at him.
Ah? You make a serious accusation. Do you wish me to translate?
By all means. Though I've no doubt she understood every word.
Lisha sin uristomos ununun kayen durusun sin uzerulmik ikintrien.
Bir yalansi ve bir attal.
The Damatin calls you a liar and a fool.
Tell her to drink it, then.
Amanva's eyes blazed as she snatched the cup from her without waiting for translation. The liquid was still hot, but she lifted her veil and quaffed it in one gulp. She glared at Misha with a look of smug triumph, but Misha only smiled.
Tell her I know she can just take the antidote tonight, but if it's the same one we use in the north, it'll give her bloody shits for a week.
The color drained from the tiny patch of skin visible around Amanva's eyes.
The next time you try something like this, I'll tell your father. And if I know him at all, your shared blood won't keep him from stripping that pretty white robe off your back and tanning your hide if he doesn't kill you outright.
Amanva glared at her, but Misha simply waved a dismissal.
Leave us.
Obizikov magisin senin yerin dijil.
It is not your place to dismiss us.
Leisha turned to Roger, who looked like he was going to be sick.
Ugh, send your brides to their chambers, Roger.
Go!
He didn't even make eye contact. Amanva's brows met in a harsh V.
Ben senin, gormaya sejim kuze dizi kopek.
Amanva stormed off with Sikva on her heels. Leisha memorized the words, filing the curse for future reference.
It's no wonder the Damaja fears you.
She doesn't seem afraid now. Bold as brass trying to kill me in broad day.
After Aman's last decree, it is little surprise. But take heart. They do you great honor. In Krasia, if no one is trying to kill you, it is because you are not worth killing.
Aban sat and finished his tea, then left a short time later.
Maybe it's time to leave, if they'll even let us.
Aman would let us go, if I asked him to. But I'm not going anywhere.
Leisha, they tried to kill you.
And never tried, and failed. Running off now would be just as good for her as if I died. I refuse to be driven off by that...
Witch?
Witch. She's got too much power over Aman as it is. I'm not giving up his ear without a fight.
Are you sure it's his ear you're after?
Leisha glared at him, but he met her gaze coolly.
I'm not blind, Leisha. I see how you look at him. Not like a Krasian wife, perhaps, but not like a friend, either.
How I feel about him is irrelevant. I have no intention of becoming part of his harem. Did you know Khaji had 1,000 wives?
Poor bastard. Reckon one is more than enough for most men to handle.
You'd do well to remember that yourself. Besides, Aban and Aman both know Arlen, and both claim to be his friend.
That's not what he told us. About Jardir, anyway.
I know. And I want to learn the truth.
What about Amanva and Sikva? Do we send them away?
So they can kill Sikva for lying about her virginity and failing to kill me? Not a chance. We took responsibility for her.
That was before she tried to kill you.
See the light, Roger. If I told Wanda to put an arrow in Enevra's eye, I have no doubt she would do it, but the crime would be mine. Better we have them here, where we can watch them, and perhaps learn something useful.
It was deep in the night, and Leisha slept restfully in her chambers.
Leisha! Leisha, wake up! Quickly!
Leisha lit a lamp, and she pulled on a robe of Krasian silk that Jardir had sent to her. She opened her door to see Roger standing there, looking haggard.
It's Amanva. I can hear her wailing in her chambers, but Sikva won't even open the doors.
I knew it. All right, let's go to see her.
They went down into Roger's wing, and Leisha pounded on the door to the chambers the two Krasian girls had claimed.
Oh, Senhu Spuyerde de Gilston!
Roger, run and fetch Garrod! If this door isn't open by the time you get back, have him break it down!
Roger nodded and ran off. As expected, the door cracked open a moment later, and a terrified Sikva peeked out.
Everything sunny.
Leisha shoved past her into the room, following Amanva's voice toward the privy chamber at the back of the room. Sikva tried to interpose herself, but again Leisha ignored her and tried the door. It was locked.
Where is the key?
Ben anatar in erai munkun olabilir. Olabilidigini bilimiorum.
Sikva ignored her, but Leisha had had enough.
Stop pretending you don't understand me. I'm not an idiot. You say one more word in Krasian, and the Damaja's anger will be the least of your worries.
Sikva did not reply, but the terrified look on her face made it clear she had understood.
Where is the key?
Sikva quickly reached into her robes, producing it. Leisha was through the door in an instant. The richly appointed privy stank of waste and vomit, only made worse by the jasmine burning in the incense brazier, a sickly combination that would have made most anyone heave. Leisha ignored the stench, going straight to Amanva lying on the floor next to the commode. Her hood and veils were cast aside, and her olive skin seemed almost white.
She's dehydrated. Bring a pitcher of cold water and set a kettle on the fire.
Sikva ran off, and Leisha continued to inspect the girl, as well as the contents of the commode. Finally, she sniffed at the cup on the vanity table, tasting the residue.
You brewed this poorly. You could have used a third as much flesh root and still safely counteracted the black leaf.
The young Damating said nothing, staring blankly, but Leisha knew she heard and understood every word. She took a mortar and pestle from her apron, hands darting from pocket to pocket without so much as a glance as she filled it with a proper mixture of herbs. Sikva brought the hot water, and Leisha brewed a second potion, bidding Sikva to hold her mistress up as she forced it down the girl's throat.
Open the windows to blow in some fresh air and bring pillows. She'll need to stay by the commode for the next few hours as we hydrate her.
Leisha and Sikva attended to Manva until her insides calmed and they could carry her to the bed.
Sleep's the best thing for you now. You'll wake in 12 hours, and then we'll try to get some rice and bread into you.
Why are you doing this? My mother would not be so kind to one who tried to poison her.
Nor would mine. But we are not our mothers, Amanva.
When next I face her, I may wish the poison had killed me.
You're under my roof now. No one is going to try to do anything to you, including force you to marry Roger if you don't want to.
Oh, but we do, mistress. The handsome son of Jessam is touched by Everam. First and second wives to such a man. What more could any woman aspire to?
Leisha opened her mouth to reply, then promptly closed it again, knowing any answer she gave would fall upon uncomprehending ears. Elona was sitting in the hall when Leisha finally emerged from Amanva's chambers. Leisha wanted nothing more than to crawl into her bed herself, but Elona stood and moved to walk with her back to the stairs.
It true what Roger says? The girls tried to poison you?
Yes.
Means and Evra thinks you've got a good chance of stealing him from her.
I'm fine, if you care.
Course you are. You're my daughter, like it or not. Ain't no desert witch gonna stop you once you've got a shine for a man.
I don't want to steal another woman's husband, Mother.
Then why are you here?
To try and stop a war.
And if the cost of stopping a war is stealing the husband of a woman who tried to murder you, is that too high a price to pay? Oh, ain't stealing anyways. These women share husbands like hens share roosters.
Oh, to be so lucky as to be one of Amon's laying hens.
Better than the ones that goes to slaughter.
They reached Leisha's apartments and Elona followed her in. Leisha fell onto a pillowed divan, putting her head in her hands.
I wish Bruno were here. She'd know what to do.
She'd marry Jardir and tame him. If she had your body and you, shoot, she'd have been both deliverers to her will by now and gotten her toes curled to sweeten the pot.
You can't know that, Mother.
I know better than you. I was apprenticed to that miserable old hag before you were ever born. And there were a scant few alive then old enough to remember Bruna in her prime. Whew, legs never closed, to hear them say it, till she married late in life. And she ran that town even more surely than she did in her dotage. More surely than you run it now, because she had power. Not just here.
Elona poked Leisha in the temple.
But here as well.
She stabbed a finger to point at her own crotch.
That is a woman's power, as much as gathering herbs. And only a fool chooses not to take advantage of it.
Take advantage how?
Jardir is obsessed with you. Any woman can read it on him at a glance. That is why it never fears you. And why you have opportunity to take this desert snake by the throat and turn it aside from your people.
My people? The Hollow?
Of course the Hollow. Rising sun has set and ain't nothing for it.
What of Angiers? Lacton? Every hamlet between here and there. I might be able to protect the Hollow, but what can I do for them?
From Jardir's bed? Is there a place in the world you could influence the war more? Slake a man's lust, and he will give you anything you ask. Surely that big brain of yours can think of a few simple requests to turn the worst of his tide. Or would you rather it be Inevra's voice that whispers advice in his ear as he drifts off to sleep each night?
It was a terrifying thought, and Leisha shook her head, but she still felt unsure.
The gates of heaven don't lie between your legs, Leisha. I know you wanted to wait for your wedding night, and truth be told, I wanted that for you too. But it didn't happen that way. And life goes on.
You see the world very clearly, Mother. I envy you sometimes.
You do?
Not often, mind.
Renna waited patiently as the rock demon materialized. She had chosen her perch carefully, high in the single tall tree atop a hill where a large facing of bedrock jutted from the ground like a broken bone sticking through flesh. The pattern of tracks in the soil told her the giant Corling, some dozen feet tall, materialized in this same spot almost every night. Over the past 6 weeks, Arlen had taught her many things, including the fact that rock demons were creatures of habit, and lesser demons would have learned to stay clear of any rising place claimed by a rock demon. As the foul gray mist seeped from the bedrock, slowly coalescing into demonic form, she closed her eyes as she embraced her fear and found her inner center. The world looked different as she opened her eyes and stood, bare feet gripping the tree limb in perfect balance. In her left hand, she gripped Harl's knife, running her thumb absently over the ward she had carved into the bone handle. In her right, she held a single chestnut. Her waist-length brown hair had gotten in her way and was now a short, spiky remnant with only a single braided tail to recall its former length. She had discarded her dress entirely, cutting her shift into two parts, a high vest laced tightly to hold her breasts in place, but open below to reveal her warded belly, and a skirt slit high on both sides to free her warded legs. Arlen still refused to ward her flesh for her, but she had ignored him, grinding her own black stems. The ink stained her skin a dark brown that lasted many days before fading. She looked down, seeing the demon solidify at last, and flicked the chestnut. Without waiting to see if it struck its mark, she stepped off the branch into thin air, dropping silently. The chestnut hit the demon's far shoulder as she fell, the heat ward she had painted onto its smooth surface blazing bright in the darkness as it sucked magic from the powerful coiling. The tough nut became superheated in an instant. The rock demon was unharmed, but the flash and noise turned its head the other way just as Renna landed on its broad, armored shoulder. She grabbed one of its horns with her free hand for balance and drove her knife into its throat. She snarled and drew her arm back for another strike, but the demon threw its head back, and it was all Renna could do to hold on to its horn and keep her perch. She swung wildly to avoid the talons as the demon clawed and punched at its own head in an effort to dislodge her, stabbing with a knife and kicking her warded feet at whatever targets came in range. Her blows distracted the demon, but they did little more. She could no longer access the more vulnerable eyes and throat. Sheathing her knife, Renna reached into her waistband, pulling free the long string of brookstones Kobe Fisher had given her in what seemed like another life. She whipped the necklace around the demon's throat, letting go its horn to catch the far end as it came around. She crossed her arms and dropped down into the groove between its armored shoulder blades, hanging from the ends of the leather cord just out of the enraged coiling's reach. She was slammed about but kept her grip, using her full weight to pull the warded beads tight around the demon's throat. Renna had painted the smooth stones with wards of forbidding, and they flared to repel, the magic crushing inward from all sides. The string grew warm as the magic built in intensity, brightening the night. The giant horned head fell free, and Renna kicked off, leaping out of the way. She looked at the black demon ichor on her hands and wound up her beads and ran off to continue the hunt. She had never felt so free. A flame demon came at her, a lone corling hunting through the brush by the trees. Renna set her feet as it charged, waiting for the telltale inhalation. Renna crouched, face low to the ground, presenting a clear target as the demon pulled up short right in front of her. Renna dashed to the left in that instant, the bright blast of fire spit arcing through empty air. By the time the corling opened its eyes and saw she was gone, Renna was behind it, grabbing its horns. She yanked its head back and gutted it like a hare caught in her father's field. In the scant moments the battle with the flame demon had taken, she had been surrounded. She turned to see a wood demon hunched before her, standing 6 feet to the shoulder, stooped. Farther back and waiting in the trees, her warded eyes caught its two fellows, their rough armor blending into the surrounding woods, but unable to mask their magic. When she engaged the first, the strongest, the others would come at her from the sides.
Is three more I can face?
She pushed the useless thought away. There was no outrunning demons, nowhere to hide once they spotted you. There was only kill or be killed.
Come on, then!
The warded man watched Renna from the trees on the far side of the road, shaking his head. It had taken him some time to track her down. He had gone to gather herbs and firewood and made her promise to wait at the keep until he returned so they could hunt together. This wasn't the first time Renna had gotten impatient or simply ignored his wishes and gone off on her own. Watching her slip around the flame demon's blind spot, laying it open from tooth to tail with her father's knife, he had to admit she was a fast learner. More than even Wanda of the Cutters, Renna Tanner had thrown herself into the art of demon hunting, body and soul, and her skill level, after just a few short weeks, was a testament to that. He wondered if he had done the right thing, teaching her to embrace her fears. Renna had taken it too far and quickly become reckless, as much a danger to herself as the demons. He understood what she was going through, more than she would ever know. The night was unforgiving. even to one who embraced its ways, as shown by the cups of wood demons he saw stalking Renna while her attention was focused on a flame demon. Likely, she would only see the one that came at her openly. The trunk and the branches would have her. The warded man knocked an arrow to his great bow, holding it at the ready. He would wait until she saw all three and knew doom was upon her before killing them. Perhaps then she would begin to take better care. Renna charged forward in a seemingly suicidal attack. The wood demon bared its rows of teeth and hooked claws, throwing out its chest to accept her initial strike. Renna pivoted, using her momentum to power a circle kick. The warded instep and shin exploded into the demon's chest. The other demons roared out of the trees and Renna charged at one, grabbing its wrist and setting her feet, twisting her hips to turn the force of the demon's attack against it. It was almost effortless, the way she made the heavy wood demon sail through the air into the third member of the copse. She ran into the press. One of the demons swiped at Renna from its prone position as she came within reach of its long, branch-like arms. She threw herself back, feeling the air whistle across her chest as its claws passed. She righted herself unharmed, but her momentum was lost, and all three wood demons had regained their feet to threaten her again. She reached into the pouch at her waist as they charged, hurling a handful of warded chestnuts their way. The two outermost corlings escaped unharmed, but the one in the center took the brunt of the salvo, and its shoulder caught fire. In a moment, the whole creature was aflame. Seeing their fellow ablaze, the demons to either side backpedaled away from it, separating farther and giving Renna the opening she needed. She charged back in at one, stabbing up into the vulnerable gap between the third and fourth ribs on its right side. Her long knife pierced the Corling's black heart. She pivoted and drove her knife in deeper, using it to lift the 200-pound demon clear over her head. She threw it into its blazing companion. Harl's knife, still deep in the demon, should have come free then, but the cross piece caught on its lower rib. The blade was torn from her grasp. Seeing her unarmed, the last demon charged her, tackling her into the scrub and dirt. Wards flared all over her body, but the demon, mad with rage and pain, bit and clawed wildly until its searching talons found purchase. She shoved hard against it and reversed the pin. She pumped her knees continually, hitting the demon's thighs to keep it from shifting its legs up to claw at her. She managed to free a hand, grabbing at her beads, and whipped them around the Corling's corded neck. Renna rolled off the corpse, struggling to regain her feet before the other demons were upon her. She was covered in her own blood, though already she felt the flow decreasing as her stolen magic began to knit the wounds. Still, she felt in no state to keep fighting. She refused to give in, but when she raised her eyes, there was only Arlen there, glowing brightly with magic like one of the Creator's haloed seraphs. He was clad only in his loincloth, and he was beautiful, pale muscles rippling under the pulsing wards crawling across his skin. He wasn't tall like Harl or bulky like Kobe, but Arlen exuded a strength those other men lacked. She beamed at him, flush with pride in her victory. Three wood demons.
You all right?
I just need a moment to rest.
Sit down and breathe deeply. Let the magic heal you.
Renna did as she was told, feeling the deep cuts all over her body beginning to close. Soon, most would be nothing but thin scars, and even those would fade quickly. Arlen picked up the charred remains of one of her chestnuts.
Clever.
Thanks.
But clever wards or no, that was stupid of you, Ren. You could have set the forest on fire, not to mention the foolishness of taking on three wood demons at once.
Didn't ask him to stalk me.
But you did ignore me and go hunting a ripping rock demon by yourself. And you left your cloak back at the keep.
Cloak gets in the way when I hunt.
I don't care. Last demon nearly killed you, Ren. Your ground form against it was terrible. A Nishrum could have broken that hold.
What's it matter? A one?
It matters because sooner or later you won't. Even a wood demon can get lucky and break a hold, Renna. Strong as you feel when the magic is jolting through you, you're not half as strong as they are. Forget that. Cease to respect them even for an instant and they'll have you. That means you take every advantage you can get, and being invisible to demons is a big one.
Why don't you use it?
Because I gave it to you.
Demon shit, you were hunting through your bags for it like you hadn't seen it in weeks. Bet you ain't never worn it, neither.
This ain't about me. I've been at this much longer than you, Ren. You're getting drunk on magic, and it ain't safe, I know.
If that ain't the night calling it black, you do it and you're fine.
Correspondent Renna, I ain't fine. Knight, I feel it changing me as we speak. The aggression, the disdain for day folk, it's the magic talking. Demon magic. Little makes you strong and too much makes you feral.
He held up his hand, covered in hundreds of tiny wards.
It ain't natural what I done. Made me crazy a good sight, and I don't reckon I'm even half sane now. I don't want to see it happen to you.
Renna took his face in her hands.
Thank you for caring.
He smiled and tried to look down, but she held his face and kept eye contact.
But you ain't my dad or my husband. And even if you were, my body's my own, and I'll do with it as I will. Ain't living my life how other people tell me no more. I'll follow my own path from now on.
You following your own path, or have you just latched onto mine?
Renna's eyes bulged, and every muscle in her body screamed at her to leap upon him, kicking and clawing and biting until he... She shook her head.
Leave me alone.
Come back with me to the keep.
Damn your ripping keep! Leave me alone, you son of the core!
All right.
Renna locked her jaw tight, refusing to cry as he walked away. She got to her feet, keeping her back straight despite the pain as she retrieved her knife from the charred remains of the demon. Despite the conflagration, the weapon was undamaged and still tingled with residual magic as she wiped it off and returned it to its sheath on her hip. She stood a long time after Arlen left, two sides warring within her. One wanted to scream and charge into the night, looking for demons to vent her rage upon. The other part wondered if Arlen was right, and threatened to drop her weeping to the ground at any moment. She closed her eyes, embracing both the pain and the rage, and stepping away from them. It was amazing how quickly she calmed. Arlen was simply being overprotective. After all she had done, he still didn't trust her. In a place beyond feeling, she set her feet and began the first shuriken, flowing from one move to the next, trying to force the forms into her muscles so deeply that they would come without her even thinking of them. As she did, she recalled every moment of the night's battles, searching for ways she could improve. He might be the almighty warded man to others, but Renna knew he was just Arlen Bales of Tippett's Brook, and she'd be correspond if there was anything he could do that she could not do.